That's a tune called Whistling Rufus from the latest CD by Fiddlin' Banjo Billy Matthews. And the old-time players, are Christine and Paul Breen, who are actually owners of an establishment here in Champaign-Urbana called Techline. And the group of them are going to be playing a few times in this coming week, including tomorrow night at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. They're calling it a CD release party for this very CD, which is called Rags, Relics, and Rarities, which is a wonderful title, and you can probably figure out what's on it from the title. It's fairly descriptive. In any event, Billy, thanks for coming back, and Christine for bringing him in.
Well, hello. Thank you very much.
Hello.
We were just trying to figure out between the three of us when you were here last, and I didn't think it had been as long as it perhaps has been. It's 3-4 years. So definitely welcome back to the show. I have also your previous release here called Calliope, which has just been a few years. I think if I remember, Christine, you're not a long-term banjo player.
I'm not. I actually picked up the banjo. It's going on 9 years now, and Billy's been kind of tutoring me or mentoring me on the banjo. Really about 6 months after I picked it up. And, of course, he lives two states away, so it's a little difficult to get together. But I started off, he would come to town, and I would get a lesson, and then he'd go away, and he'd come back, and so on and so forth. And then I would check to see if he was going to be close by, like in St. Louis, and I would run down there and get a lesson. So.
Yeah, not quite a decade you've been at it.
Not quite.
Time flies.
It does.
So I actually forget, two states away, I assume, in the easterly direction. Which state are you in?
Arkansas.
No, you're not. Is that only two states away?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I don't know my American geography. I have to look at the map again.
Well, yeah, northwest Arkansas.
Yeah. How did...
The western part of Arkansas, way over.
Okay. I've never been down there at all, so I'm not too familiar with what happens. But when did you discover each other? I mean, to even hook up for lessons at that sort of distance?
Well, I had found the banjo and decided I wanted to play. Actually, my husband brought one home, and I'm not sure if he's sorry today or not, but
I
went over to Urbana to Banjo Jim Imons and started lessons with him. And Billy would come and visit Jim and sit on the front porch while I had a lesson. Well, then he would go away for a couple of months and come back, and we'd be kind of doing the same thing. I wasn't really advancing. And so Billy came in the room one time, and he said, "Jim, if you break it down in little parts, maybe she can get it." And he said, "Oh, Mr. Matthews,
if you think
you can do a better job, then by all means.
I'll hand her over to you."
Yeah,
yes.
And so
he did.
And he taught me a tune. And I went home in a span of 1 hour. He taught me a whole tune, Camptown Races. And I went home, and I think I played that 1,000 times before Billy came back to town.
But you learned it right away.
I did.
Yes.
Courtesy of
your success.
Courtesy of the skillful...
Breaking
it down, sort of teaching technique. Well, you mentioned Banjo Jim Imon, who is here in town, and of course you're Banjo Billy Matthews, and we were also wondering if last time you were here, if we talked about the name, except that I assume that you got to be called Banjo Billy because you play the banjo. Is there more to it than that?
Well, there is more to it than that, actually. It was my 21st birthday, and that's a real long time ago, several centuries ago. But my 21st birthday, and I was in Oak Creek, Colorado, and I had met a friend of mine. John Walsh was his name. Anyway, he and I decided we were going to make banjos besides play them. We both played, and we were going to make banjos, and so they threw a party for me, Banjo Billy's birthday bash, and that was when I was 21. And anyway, we started making banjos at that time. And playing banjos, and then I stopped making banjos 20-some years later. But I had been playing all through that time also. So we used to make banjos and sell them and get the money and make some more. And but it was making banjos that actually fed the children, made the income to keep my children in good shape. And so it was a big celebration at my house with all my children every time I sold a banjo. It was off to the grocery store.
I was going to say, we can go to the store now, Daddy.
We can buy a big hunk of cheese and 2 gallons of milk and all this stuff. Anyway, but that's how I got the name.
So I assume that playing the banjo came before making banjos or not?
Yes, it did. I was playing a banjo that, well, we won't say where it came from, but it was a cheap instrument, let's just say that. And so my partner and I, we decided we could make things that were better than that. And then we did, actually. And we went at it and did all sorts of experiments. And years went by and instruments got made and sold. And my partner, John, he is now living in Colorado again, and he makes acoustic guitars. And he's been doing that since 79, I guess.
So is this the company that was called Phippsburg Banjos?
Phippsburg Banjo Company, right. And that's, so then John split off and he's called Cimarron. Cimarron Guitar Company. And there, he's way over by Montrose, Colorado, in the southwest corner. And he's still there. Still making guitars every day.
And is the banjo that you have with you today, is that one of your own creations?
Yeah, that's one that I actually made for myself. I stopped production, said, I'm making one for me. And so that's because I had just sold the banjo and I had a lot of money and I thought, oh, I'm doing so good, I think I'll make one for myself. And so I did that. And it's the same one. And that I made way back, I don't remember what year it was.
Well, we'll hear it at some point here. Do we want to hear that first, or do we want to hear a fiddle tune first?
Better hear some fiddle tunes first, I suppose.
Okay, because you got the fiddle in the hand. You're known for having, for knowing hundreds, if not thousands, of tunes, is how I think it has been put.
Well, we still don't know about thousands, but we know hundreds.
Probably the hard part is, how do you decide which one to...
Well...
To play.
They're all good in their own way. They're all unique things. I do have a collection of 500 tunes that I recorded, and this is something that I recorded, you know, with the idea that educationally and it would be good to leave the sound of these tunes actually recorded. So they would be easier for other people who were interested to just get the collection, put it on, and start playing, because it's all by ear. So there's no sheet music that goes with it or anything. It's just listen to it and play. But that's how I learned. And so so it's right now, the 500 collection is out. People own it, and people are learning tunes off of it. And I'm working on the next 100 right now. So I'm going to keep going. And I might make 1,000. We don't know yet. But it all comes down to when I first started the 500 project, I asked myself, well, how many tunes do you really know? And I didn't know. I didn't know if it was 20 or if it was 50 or if it was 200. And now after 500, working on 600, I'm not done yet. I know more. Or I will.
So these are tunes that, for the most part, you already knew.
Yes.
But you're still picking them up.
Right. I'm
still picking up new ones.
Still learning fast and furious new things that are interesting. There's a lot of tunes that are similar to some that I know. And so those, I go past those. I would rather pick out something that strikes my ear as being, oh, I don't know that one at all. I should learn that. And about 90% of the things I learn are from other people. In the process of playing. And then probably the other 10% is stray recordings that I come up with or people give to me, and I go through them and I say, oh, there is one, and I'll learn it because I'm interested.
Yeah.
But so I want, you know, it's a good thing to do so that the posterity, for posterity, a lot of these simple renditions of these tunes are recorded so people can get at them and try to learn how to play them. because, you know, as time goes by, there's more and more dead fiddlers, more of them dropping by the wayside. And so the idea is to, you know, to save this information for children and future generations so that they know, oh, how, what's the bare bones rendition of that tune? And they can go to my archive and pick it out and say, oh, I see. And it's a thing that helps understanding. Because a lot of these tunes that are on there have been played by other people in various ways with lots of extra phrases and notes and syncopation and all sorts of things. And for a lot of people learning how to play, it's all very confusing. So if you give it to them melody-wise, very simply, something they could hum or they could whistle, there's a good chance to learn how to play it.
So we're back to the question of what did you decide to do to start with today, if you've even decided yet?
Oh, well, I'll just come up with something. Let's see, I had that other one. Well, let's play, what is that? I don't know where it comes from exactly. I think I got it from somebody in Indiana, but it's called Sheep Shuckin' Corn. And it's an old dance tune, which there are so many of these are. And it goes like, let's see, I'll think of it. And what that means is actually the sheep are in the cornfield, and they're ripping it apart. And they shouldn't be, but they are. Sheep Shuckin' Corn.
Banjo Billy Matthews here on Live and Local, playing for us live in our studio. So that end, was that actually belong to the tune, or that's just...
No, it's a tag that you can put on the end of a tune.
What I sort of assumed.
It's that was a da-da-da-da-da. That's a shaving a haircut.
Two
a
bits.
Version of shaving a haircut.
Yep. Or bum-ba-dum-bum-bum-bum. This is the other...
And not all tunes do you have to do that too, but you can. It so, just signifies that you're ending.
So it doesn't necessarily have its own ending?
No. You can end them. When the last note of the last phrase is played, it's over.
Is that typical of most fiddle tunes or just some fiddle tunes? They don't end?
Yeah, most of them don't really have endings. It's up to the fiddler to either put a tag on it or two tags or nothing. Just end on the last note and that's it.
That's it. When you started that, you said, "Okay, let's see. I'll remember it in a second."
And I did.
You did. How do you know when you're coming up with the tunes, you know, for your 500 tunes project or the next one, that it didn't just become another tune that
you mean that
you thought you remembered?
Oh, that I thought I remembered. Oh, I see how that. Well, there's something about remembering all of these tunes to begin with. It teaches you to be real, well, it teaches you to observe real closely what the melody line actually is. And so if you keep those straight in your mind and don't let them get blurred, then you can remember All I need is two or three notes and the thought of how it goes, and then there it is. But that takes lots of practice and lots of doing it. So there's a few tunes on my 500 collection that I'll look at the title and I go, nope, doesn't register. Nope, doesn't register. So there's a couple of them in there where I can read the name to myself and the first two notes don't come to mind. But good thing I made the archive.
Because you can't, so you have to go back and listen to yourself playing.
Well, I haven't yet, but I've threatened to more than
you
once.
You have talked about categorizing tunes in your brain.
Yes.
That are like each.
Similar tunes go in with other tunes, so I kind of make up tune families. Things that are in the same key and have similar phrasings. Definitely different, but I would call them in the same family.
So in the archive, do you have them organized that way?
Not on the 500.
In the 500, no, I don't have them organized that way. Just in my brain, I do.
I wonder if if organizing them that way in an archive, you know, that somebody else is learning from by rote, would make it easier or harder to learn. Because I would think the more similar they are, the harder it would be
to separate them,
yeah.
Right. Well, with fiddle tunes, it's the subtleties. And that's it exactly. And one will have a different subtlety than another, even though they might have the same chord progression that goes behind them. The melody notes are different. And I think I had to learn several tunes, maybe a couple hundred of them, before I actually started categorizing them by what was similar to what. But if I remember one of the family, I can remember the rest of the family.
So, for example, would it be fair to ask you for a tune that you could categorize with the one you just played?
Yeah. Well, another one that would be in the same family, sure. The Devil and His Wife. And this is, but you won't find it similar. But
the chord progression is
one leads to another one, and so it helps though when you've got a whole block of them. And if you can remember one or two of them, you can remember 100 of them. So it's one of those things. I guess it just takes a lot of tenacity to remember what it is and make sure you remember. And if you think you're going to forget, then you better play the tune again to refresh your brain.
So this is one that's in the same family as Sheep, Shuck, and Corn because of the chord progression.
Well, and I think I got it from the same person. Mm. And that helps too. Here. This is how this one goes.
Devil and His Wife.
Yep.
Played by Fiddlin' Banjo Billy Matthews. So from the name, you might correctly assume we'll eventually hear him do some banjoing here also. He's here in Champaign-Urbana area for the release of his new CD with the old-time players. One of the two old-timers, so to speak, is with us here on the show, Christine Breen.
But she's not that old.
No, and she and her wife, Paul, are the old-time players. She plays banjo on this CD, and then Paul, six-string guitar exclusively?
Six-string guitars exclusively, except for the very first tune you played as you came in whistling Rufus.
Mm.
That was him whistling. So that was his whistling debut.
So, well.
Whistling debut, that's right.
And a fine debut it was. The new CD is called Rags, Relics, and Rarities. And it will be available, I'm sure, at each place they're playing, including tomorrow night at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana, starting at 5 o'clock till 7. Then they'll be playing at the Urbana Contra Dance Friday night from 8 to 11. Anybody's welcome to join those dances typically, and I think they have a sort of a teaching moment beforehand, usually.
They do, a half an hour before the dance starts.
A half hour, so yeah. Quick, yeah, got to do some quick learning. That'll be at the Phillips Recreation Center in Urbana. And then a couple of gigs at Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store in Urbana as well. That'll be on Saturday and Sunday. So, Christine, will you and Paul be with Billy for all of those occasions?
I believe all of them, except Paul may not make the last Sunday at Strawberry Fields, but he should be with us most of those.
Okay, yeah. So you get to hear.
Yeah.
Well, that's how we get our practice in, too, in front of people.
Yeah, well, and I suppose especially at a food store, food market, people are probably paying marginal attention, except you can sit down and listen in the cafe section.
You can sit down.
Yeah, and we do find that people tend to buy an extra loaf of bread and maybe some specialty item they didn't think of because they're just a little happier than they were before they came in the store.
There could be that. Either that or they came in to hear you specifically and they feel guilty about leaving without
buying something. Well, either way.
Well, they're good hosts. So Christine was talking a little bit at the beginning about how you sort of took over her tutelage inadvertently.
Yes.
Yes, I did.
And effectively by breaking down a tune in a way that she was able to learn. And, of course, that was on the banjo, but I assume that your teaching on the fiddle would be similar. Can you maybe give us a little idea of how you might break down a tune for somebody who wanted to learn? And I guess this is a moment for listeners to get out your fiddle if you want to learn a tune.
Yes,
right.
Hurry
now.
Up.
Well, the thing about it is you usually take a phrase, if it's not too difficult, and play the complete phrase, but slowly. So let's see, what would be... Anything would work, I suppose. Anyone that I've ever taught anybody before. Something. I'll think just a second.
Old Glory?
That takes me... What?
Old Glory.
Old Glory. Okay, well, that's... I don't...
Or one of your waltzes?
Let's see. No. Do-do-do-do-do. Okay, here's one called, let's see... That one. Oh, that's called the innkeeper. Okay, this is one of my tunes. But anyway, the whole tune goes. So the first, I would say, we start with the first part, and it would be... And now that's double string there, but that's what we would start with. And that's what I would get people to do, real slow.
And they probably do it a combination just listening to it, but also looking at your fingers, see which strings you're playing and so
on. And I'll just keep playing it real slow, and they'll start, and they'll get, and pretty soon, a little light will come on in their eyes, and they say, yeah, we got that much. So then we'll do, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then you say, well, then do that again. And then play that note. Off and on. And then the thing that you just did. And then the last phrase would be. And now you'll notice in both parts, the reoccurring theme is. So in the first part. Is. So. If you come around to that phrase, then that helps you out right away because it's that phrase that begins the second part. So it's kind of, you double up wherever there's something. If you do it once and then it applies again, then you make note of that. So then the second part starts with that. Now that is similar to that same note. So you've already played those notes. So pretty soon you just keep going over it slowly, one part at a time, and then you end up with the reoccurring theme. On this one has one. Not all of them have reoccurring themes, but another thing about that particular tune is the beginning, it's everything is there's open strings everywhere. When you play it all together, it sounds more fluid, but when you separate it all out by each movement of the bow, you get. So it's actually very rudimentary.
And our I have the advantage over our listeners of being able to actually see what you were doing. So each of those dida starts with a fingered string.
Fingered note and an open.
And then you open it, finger
and
note,
open
note. Finger note,
and,
open.
And so there's a pattern right there of doing that. And so by itself, it doesn't sound. So I break it up into pieces like that. It's just bow back and forth, thumb. Almost like hitting it rather than drawing the bow real long. So that's with real long bows. But I try to encourage people to just chop at it. So when you put it all together, it doesn't actually sound like. Sounds different.
Right.
And that also has to do with how you play it and learning how to play the phrase well.
Sure, and that comes, as with so many types of music, that may come later. You get the notes.
You get the notes and keep going over and over, and eventually things start to happen as far as how easy it comes to you. And so you get more familiar with it. And the more familiar with every motion you make, the easier it should get.
And the more likely it'll stay in your brain, your fingers, your arm. And
right. So muscle memory.
Multiple ways of memory.
We call it that.
The way that song is structured, now that's one of your own tunes, as you said.
Right.
Is that fairly typical of a fiddle tune's construction, meaning you have a repeated portion with and you play it again with a minor variant, and then you might come back, and then.
Yeah. That's most tunes, not most of them, but many, many, many are just like that as far as how they're put together. With a lot of times, a part of the second part of the tune is derived from the first part. But now I got another tune. Let me play this one, and this one defies everything, I guess.
Well. Before,
I was actually going to ask you for something like that.
Yeah, that defies it. But before we leave that subject,
yes.
One of the most important things of mentoring and teaching is patience, right, Billy?
Yes. Patience is the key.
Well, I think he was just demonstrating that right now.
Trying to be.
So what's this this renegade tune?
Well, it's just a, it doesn't defy everything, but each phrase is different. Nothing really repeats. That's a tune I got. Where did I? Oh, I got it from a fellow named Richard. Richard from, oh, where the heck does he live? Kalamazoo, Michigan. And it's called Get Aboard the Ship. It's a fun little tune. But it goes, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's real fun, the way it goes. Get Aboard the Ship.
Get Aboard the Ship. Banjo Billy Matthews here on Live and Local. Well, I should say, in this context, Fiddlin' Banjo Billy Matthews.
Yes, it can be confusing.
Yeah. Who's live in our studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our broadcast is supported by these business partners, Swire's Land and Management Company of Danville, Murray Wise Associates, LLC of Champaign, First National Bank and Trust Company of Clinton, and Bates Commodities Incorporated of Normal. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible, and we thank you very much for your support. Banjo Billy is actually in town being Champaign-Urbana right now, from Arkansas, on the occasion of the release of his latest CD with the old-time players. It's called Rags, Relics, and Rarities. And there's one on-time online reviewer who actually picked it as among his top 13 for 2013.
Yes, Lanny music. Fields.
Lanny Fields. Is Lanny Fields somebody
he's
I should know?
He's an Irish player and does a lot of talking. So
just like us on Live and Local.
Yes.
And but he enjoyed it very, very much. And we should also mention that CD was recorded by Ed Shackelford. He lives in Mahomet, Illinois. And he is a very patient, wonderful person to have sat with us for as many hours as it took to put that together.
Until you got it right? Is that?
Yeah,
until Christine got
it right.
Well, I didn't do it right all the time either, but that's okay.
You messed up once, I think.
You got to do it wrong before you get it right.
That's true
for just about everybody. Well, they're going to be playing at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening from 5 to 7. That's the official CD release party, I guess.
The first one we've had.
Yeah. And then they'll be playing for the Urbana Contra Dance at the Phillips Recreation Center in Urbana, of course, 8 to 11 on Friday. And when are you going to be at Strawberry Field? Saturday and Sunday, but what time?
11 to 1.
11
over
to 1
the lunch
each day.
Hour. Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is typically, I think, when if there's music at Strawberry Fields, which is the food store, natural food store, also in downtown Urbana. That's usually the time that it's happening. When do we get to hear your banjo, Billy?
He's struggling on that.
I'm thinking about that.
He hasn't played the banjo for a long time, has he?
Well, I don't play every day.
No.
I play the fiddle most of the time.
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe he could do what I call a really squeaky fiddle tune.
Screechy?
Fiddle tunes.
Squeaky?
Squeaky, screechy.
Wasn't that last one
reachy
squeaky
notes?
Enough?
Well, actually, before...
That
before,
was pretty reachy.
Before you play a screechy tune, I wanted to ask, I mean, you said after sort of demonstrating how you might teach the previous tune, mm-hmm. that then you talk about some of the nuances and so on, and I've always been curious whether it would be genuinely inauthentic to play the fiddle as you might play the classical violin. Of course, they're the same instrument, but the way you play them is typically very different. I mean, if you got somebody coming in here with classical training and they started playing a fiddle tune with their luscious sound and their big vibrato, uh-huh. would that be just stylistically wrong?
Well, it would be stylistically inappropriate. We never say wrong because that leads you to think not good at all. But inappropriate, yeah, because in most of these tunes... that have survived more than, a couple hundred years anyway. Most of the people that have played these tunes in the context of community, like at a dance, weren't trained violin people at all. They could whistle a tune, and maybe their grandpa had a fiddle, and they learned how to tune it, and grandpa said, well, if you can play it, you can have it. And they learned how to play it. And so it's all by hearing it and saying, does that sound good? And if people can jump around and dance and enjoy it for dancing, then it's good enough. And so nobody really had a criteria of what was, their only criteria was, it's good enough to play the dance. We could dance to that.
And enjoy it.
So you don't have to get any better at it. Just play the same tune over and over and over again and we'll keep dancing. So it was a very simple way of interacting with your community. So there, very few violinists would choose playing old-time dance tunes of that because they're already a little too sophisticated.
And you can look at any of a number of fiddlers, mm-hmm. and their technique, such as it is sometimes, would look quite different from another one. Line up five of them and they don't even...
Yeah, you'd play the same tune and they'd play it all different.
They'd hold their fingering hand very differently.
Yep.
Classical violinists might be appalled about some
yes,
of the ways
they
tuck their left wrist under,
yes.
or they stick the violin into their chest instead of underneath their neck.
Yeah.
Underneath the chin.
Lots and lots of variances on how people... actually come up with the sound. The idea is just get the tune to be something that you could dance to, and then that's good enough. And all the fancy notes and fancy bowing and all that kind of stuff, really, for the purpose of dancing, doesn't matter. I mean, it's so you would get better the more and more you played. Things do just start to happen. Notes get slurred, bow movements get longer sometimes shorter, depending on what. So you start experimenting with how you approach all the notes and all the phrases.
So what about this screechy tune? What makes it particularly, I mean, why would you have,
I guess the last
what,
is, one
what does
was
that even
kind
mean?
Of screechy. Well, it's those reachy notes when you see his pinky go all the way up the fingerboard and his eye kind of twitches.
I miss the eye twitch.
It's when the when you have high notes in there. Like in that one, what was it? Whatever that was. Anyway, we got another screechy one for you.
Okay.
And this one's called Monkey in a Dog Cart. Now, Monkey in a Dog Cart doesn't get played hardly ever, so that's why we like to play it out, because it's one of those obscurities.
With a name like that, I'm a little surprised that it doesn't.
Yeah, so it's very simple. Thank you.
Monkey in a dog cart.
It's got some of those high notes up there, and the idea is never to try to screech in the same way twice.
So if you miss the top note, that might be actually somewhat authentic.
Yeah, and the idea about playing tunes like that is note passages. It's to you're allotted only so much time where you can get the note correct. So a lot of it is coming up to that time limit and making sure you get it or go past it, so at least you've hit it, and then you go away from it. So it's just getting the note in its proper time parameter. And you just have to go by it. You don't have to get it and make it a perfect note. You just have to make it, pretend like it's really there by playing it. So when you go way up on the high one, you can do it by doing it slowing, going up to it, as long as you get there within the time that's allotted, it counts. So you can do any of that craziness. Anyway, but that's part of the fun of the tune. So you never try it, you try to play it different every time you do it. Play the same notes, but maybe make more of them or less of them. And when you're playing a screechy part, you might as well get the most out of the screechy part as possible. So there's an example of that, I guess.
Is there, can one screech a banjo?
I guess one could. Yes, I suppose one should. All right,
a banjo.
All right.
We are talking with Christine Breen of the Tech Line furniture store in Champaign, who with her husband Paul constitute the old time players, and they have joined up with Fiddlin' Banjo Billy for this new CD that's called Rags, Relics, and Rarities. Which I'm sure they would encourage you to buy at their at their gigs coming up this weekend. The Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 5. And they'll be at Strawberry Fields Food Store this Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 1. And then playing the Urbana Contra Dance from 8 to 11 on Friday night. And, of course, they're here with us live, here on Live and Local.
Yeah.
So here I'm really pushing Billy to... to prove how he got to be Banjo Billy, besides making the instruments once upon a time. But this is one that, as he said earlier, he's actually made. Looks nice.
Well, thank you. I made it for myself a long time ago, and it hasn't let me down. So there's no reason to get another one or have to do anything else about it. Besides play it, I guess. Banjo, there's always tuning. And getting it close enough is good enough. Anyway. Good enough. We say close enough. Okay, here's a tune called... Oh, well, this tune has a little history to it. It's called Billy Goat. And, it was originally called Billy Goat in the Rain. And this is inspired down at my place in Arkansas. We used to have a billy goat with great big horns. And he was in charge of the flock of goats we had. And every time it would rain, he'd go in the outhouse and turn around and you'd see Billy Goat soaking wet, sticking his head out of the outhouse. So it inspired a tune. So now it's just Billy Goat. But anyway, I was... had a friend of mine who was with me at the time, Clark Buehling, who's been here before.
A couple of times on the show, yep.
And I think Clark actually came up with the first part. Because we both were witnessing the same goat several times.
He doesn't remember coming up with the first part, so
well,
it became your tune.
Must be my tune. Anyway, it goes, Billy Goat. Thank you.
there's Banjo Billy proving his moniker, I guess. So when you name a tune, or when you have a tune that ends up being called Billy Goat and it's inspired by this. Now, well, maybe I should ask this question.
Okay.
Was the tune inspired by the Billy Goat, or did the Billy Goat inspire just the name of the tune?
Well, no, actually the Billy Goat did, because we knew how the Billy Goat would walk, you know, when he was leading the gang somewhere or taking them up the mountain up to the big cliff where they used to spend a lot of time. The way the Billy Goat would walk, he had this kind of strut, and he had great big horns, and the kind of the rhythm of the whole tune has to do with how the Billy Goat is actually walking. So, and he had this air about him.
A little bit of a swagger.
Yes, a swagger, exactly. And so, and then when you get to the part that goes, it's kind of like a reprieve, and he's kind of looking around like, yeah, I really do own the place. Like that walk. So you wouldn't want to play that too fast, because Billy Goat couldn't walk that fast. Mm. So it's inspired by this Billy Goat that I had.
Well, that was going to be the second part of my question, which was whether the tune took on some characteristic of whatever the inspiration was.
Right. And it did. No, when I moved to this place in Arkansas, there was a herd of goats that went with it. So I said, okay, I'll take them. And with them was this big Billy Goat, big old horns. We made friends, and then we fought it out several times. And then he'd come up, and he just wanted to play. So he'd want to pretend to butt me, and then he'd want me to grab his horns. And after I proved that I was the stronger, I could hold his head down in the dirt if I wanted to, then we became good buddies.
Okay, and then play just became a genuine play.
Yeah, and he would actually come up and nudge me in the butt when I was trying to do something. I'd say, go away, go away. And he'd come and do it again. Just
wanting to play all the time. But I imagine there's plenty of tunes where the name is just a name.
Right.
Without any real reflection in the tune itself.
A lot of tunes are just named after what comes to mind with anybody who makes up the tune. The one that I played earlier, The Innkeeper. Doesn't really have anything to do with somebody at an inn renting me a room or anything. It just seemed like a good name.
Can you think of another one that where the tune expresses the name somehow?
Those are hard. Let's see.
Shake It Up.
Which one?
Shake It Up.
One called Shake It Up. How's it go?
That kind of intro.
This one's called Shake It Up. Well, I can't play it that fast, but... Thank you.
and shake it up, just the activity of it as much as anything.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah. Fiddlin' Banjo Billy, Fiddlin' Banjo Billy Matthews, a little tricky to say, has been my guest this portion of Live and Local. Well, this whole Live and Local. Christine Breen as well, with husband Paul Breen. They are the old-time players. And together, the three of them have this new CD called Rags, Relics, and Rarities. It's just out, and it's having its official CD release party tomorrow night at 5 o'clock until 7 at the Iron Post on South Ray Street in Urbana. They'll be playing a contra dance at the Phillips Recreation Center in Urbana Friday night from 8 to 11, and they'll be playing at Strawberry Fields Saturday and Sunday, Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store downtown Urbana from 11 until 1. And thank you very much for coming in and spending the time with us.
Well, thanks for having us.
It's certainly been a pleasure. I'll mention a few other things you can go see and hear live over the next couple of days. Let's see. This is Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
This is Tuesday. That means that Paul Sabuco and Susan Williams are at TNT Tavern in Rantoul tonight at 8 o'clock. The Old Style Sextet is at Bouvance in Urbana at 7 o'clock this evening. Ben and Kate play jazz at Jim's Steakhouse in Peoria tonight at 7:30. Tomorrow in Danville, it's the Starlight Ball with music by Captains 3 at the Chris Healthy Aging Center, CRIS Healthy Aging Center, 6:30 tomorrow evening. Bob Watson and Matt Stewart play at Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow evening, also at 6:30. The Feud and Hillbillies are at Sliders in Long Creek tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. And it's the weekly Gunny Sack Review at the Yoder Center in Arthur tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. On tomorrow's Live and Local, we'll be talking with a couple of folks involved with the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company about their annual event, their Ginny Awards, which always has a preview of the coming season. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And then on Thursday, I'll talk with singer-songwriter Bill Price from Indiana, who's playing at Walnut Street Winery in Rochester, and hear a lot of music from his various CDs. Hope you can join us for Live and Local. Weekdays 4 to 5. Thank you very much for joining us on today's program. This is WYLL FM 90.9. I should say it the other way around. 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Stay tuned for All Things Considered from NPR at 5. And here is the final tune that is on that CD, Rags, Relics, and Riches. This is called Grandpa's Old Time Waltz, and it's one of William F. Matthews. Is that Banjo Billy?
Yes, same person indeed.
One of his own tunes, Grandpa's Old Time Waltz, here on Live and Local.